Hello and welcome to this course on the 6 steps to increase profits in architecture firms. My name is Enoch Bartlett Sears, AIA, and I'm the publisher at Business of Architecture. This course was originally recorded at the Business of Architecture Summit in 2014. This course is registered with AICES for continuing professional education. Certificates of completion will be provided upon request, and credits will be reported for all AICES members. 6 steps to increase profits in architecture firms. Today's presentation is given by June R. Jewell, CPA. She's a business management consultant to the A&E industry. She's also the best-selling author of Find the Lost Dollars, 6 Steps to Increase Profits in Architecture, Engineering, and Environmental Firms. For over 28 years, she's worked with hundreds of business owners to help them improve their processes and their systems and to give them the tools they need to be able to hold their employees and managers accountable to increase profitability. Her clientele includes architecture, engineering, environmental consulting, government contractors, and management consulting firms across the United States. Since the release of her book, Find the Lost Dollars, 6 Steps to Increase Profits in Architecture, Engineering, and Environmental Firms, June Jewell has developed a proven system to help A&E firms discover lost profits that have been hiding in 9 areas of their business. In this presentation, she'll guide you through 6 steps outlined in the book and help you discover where you can make the biggest impact in your practice. You'll be able to calculate your company metrics and identify where the most money can be found. You'll be able to assess your business into 9 areas to understand where money's being lost through problems with people, processes, and technology. You'll also be able to develop a plan of recommended changes to make improvements and have the resources and knowledge to implement these changes, measure, and track your results. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to June Jewell, who's the presenter for this course.
So my first question for you today is, what do football teams, Olympic athletes, and A&E firms have in common?
And we have a special prize for whoever can get that.
And you notice I'm a big Redskins fan, even though it's very painful to say that today. So the answer is, they all keep score. And we're going to talk about how architects keep score today. Architects keep score by measuring their results through metrics. And the metrics that we're going to focus on today are your win rate, your utilization rate, and your project profit margin. And I believe that these are the 3 key metrics that you really need to keep your eye on as you grow your businesses, to make sure that you're on track and you're going to be successful from a financial standpoint. And so we're going to be talking about these metrics in a great deal today. And by focusing on 3 metrics, it allows you to kind of keep it simple. You know, there's a lot of financial information when you're running a business. And by keeping it to 3, the 3 most important ones, I believe that you'll really have a good grounding to know whether you're on track or not. And I don't know if any of you follow Jack Welch. He's the former CEO of General Electric, but he was a very successful entrepreneur and business leader. And he says, if change is happening on the outside faster than on the inside, the end is in sight. And I'm a big believer of this. I believe that the world is changing very, very fast. And as business owners, we have to really be aware of what we need to keep moving and changing in order to be successful. So keep that in mind as we go through the day today. So we're going to first start by talking about 9 areas where architecture firms typically lose money. And as we get into this, we're going to be talking about people, process, and technology. And those are the 3 primary components to where we need to focus our attention as we go through the 6 steps later on to understand how to improve our businesses. And I believe you can't have just 2 of these. If you have great people and great processes but terrible systems, you're going to not be as efficient as your competitors. If you have great systems and processes but terrible people or untrained people, you're going to have, it's not going to work. You're not going to get things done. And if you have great systems and people, but you have no process, then everybody's just going to kind of do it their own way, and it's going to be all over the place. So having control of these three things is very, very important to being successful and finding that lost money in the projects. We're going to start going through these nine areas. And as we're going through the nine areas, I want you to be maybe making some notes and thinking to yourself, how does this apply to my business, and what can I do in this area to hopefully find some more money? So the first area we're going to talk about is opportunities. And opportunities are projects that you are pursuing and going after and hoping to win. And there's a couple main factors here in why companies lose money on opportunities. If you think about the project life cycle, this is the first stage of the project life cycle. You're going after and trying to win a new project. And the average win rate in the architecture world is about, you know, it ranges depending on the type of firm you are and what type of projects you go after, but it ranges somewhere between, you know, kind of 30, 35, maybe up to 40%. And I work with some firms that even have win rates as low as 20%, especially if you're dealing with the federal government, that type of thing. So if you think about that, if your win rate is that low, let's say your win rate is 35%, which is pretty average. That means that 65% of your time and money that you're spending going after projects is getting lost, and you're basically throwing that money away. So the more successful you can be in increasing that win rate and getting that number up, the more financially stable and profitable you're going to be, and the better able you are to grow. And there's two major areas that I focus on with opportunities. Number one is what I call the go-no-go process. I'm sure many of you have heard of this before. This is really your decision-making process as to how you decide which proposals you want to prepare, which opportunities you want to spend your time pursuing. And within the go-no-go process, there's really two major questions you need to ask yourself. One is, can I really win this project? And that might be based on a whole lot of different criteria that you need to assess, including who your competitors are, whether you're really qualified for the project, what your relationship is with the client, what the client's relationship is with your competitors, and with potentially an incumbent if that project's already been going on with another firm. So, you know, we really need to be realistic and understand what chances you have of winning the project. The other thing you need to think about in the go-no-go process is this really going to be a good project for my company? Can we really do a good job on this project? Are we really qualified to do excellent work? Do I really have the right team in place, whether it's the subs or the designers on your team? Do you really have it? Do you really have the availability? Are you going to be able to put the time into it? And is it going to be a profitable project for us to bid on? And if you really can't come up with good answers on that go-no-go, you really shouldn't go after those projects, because ultimately going after winning and successful projects is really going to be what makes your firm successful in the end and profitable. The second area where you lose money on pursuing business is in just having a flawed process, what I call a sales process. And if you think of what professional salespeople do when they're going after new business, they have a process. They've been trained, and they have a process. But in the architecture world, very often, most people are seller doers. They're doing their day job, which includes their technical skills, and they really aren't trained to do sales. So going after new business really isn't their profession, and it's not a very professional effort that goes into it. So there can be things that just go wrong. The way you present yourself, your process for following up on things and meeting deadlines, tracking information about the opportunity so that you really have the best chance of winning. So there's definitely money that gets lost in the opportunity process. And really, if you want to grow your business, really, really think about where you want to spend your time and money in going after these opportunities. So the second area is in cumbersome proposal processes. And I find there's really two major areas that companies lose money in bidding on and preparing the actual proposals. The first area is in really understanding how to track the data that you need to track about your experience. And all architecture firms prepare proposals based on their qualifications. And so your qualifications are one of your most valuable assets that you own. And tracking every detail about those qualifications is really critical to doing a really good job on your proposal. Having all of that information at your fingertips and easily being able to find the right projects, the right project descriptions, the right resume descriptions, and all of that data that you use in order to prepare a good proposal. So really looking at how you have your data organized and how easy it is to pull out the relevant data that's important for the proposals that you're preparing. The second area that companies lose money in preparing proposals is just really how long does it take to get them done? You know, what kind of templates are you using? And do you have the most efficient processes for getting your proposals done? If your proposals involve a lot of cutting and pasting, you're going to find over time they're just taking a long time, they're inefficient, ineffective, and potentially not quite as targeted and beautiful as you want them to be. And very often, if you don't have a good process and a good system for preparing your proposal, then they're going to take a long time, and you're not going to be able to prepare as many proposals in a given period of time as you would like to, and that will ultimately affect your win rate. So I urge you to go and really look at how you're managing your data for your qualifications, as well as what is your process and what system are you using to prepare the proposal so that it's efficient, quick, and easy for you. The next area where many architects struggle is in preparing your estimates. And I believe estimates are really, really critical to the success of your projects as a whole. Everything really starts with the estimate, because if you screw up the estimate, ultimately you're going to have to live with that for a long time. And your estimate really becomes your proposal, and your proposal becomes your contract, and your contract becomes your budget. So whatever you put in this estimate and how you develop your scope of services for your estimate is going to be something you have to live with for a long time if you win the project. And so having a really good estimating process is going to be very important to making sure you're successful long-term in the project. Where I see a lot of estimates have problems, one would be in using ineffective billing rates. So even if you're bidding on a fixed fee contract, you still need to figure out what it costs you for every hour of your time, how many hours it's going to take, and what the actual phases and tasks are going to have to be in order to get the work done. That's your scope. You're also going to have to figure out how long it's going to take you from beginning to end. And are there going to be any potential contingencies? How many meetings are we going to have? And we'll talk about that a little bit later, but all of these things need to be factored into a good estimate in order to make sure that you're not going to lose money in the long term. And how you figure out your billing rates is really important to that, because you really have to have a good understanding of your cost structure, your cost per hour really is to run your business, including your direct costs, which could be the cost of your labor, any benefits that you might pay, as well as your overhead costs, which include all of your non-billable time and company expenses. So all of these things are really important, and a good understanding of the cost structure of your business is critical for you to have a good basis for developing a good estimating process. So keep your eye on that prize. How do we put together our estimates, and are they really sound estimates? The next area where many firms lose money is in scope creep. And scope creep, I define scope creep as not being able to fully recover all the costs for things that come outside the scope of your contract. So when you've developed your scope of services for your client and for your proposal, it's very important that you set expectations with your client about how you handle out-of-scope requests from the client and really get a good understanding in place with your client about how this the communication will work, approval for work outside the scope, and what your internal process is going to look like. And that process really needs to start with your contract. So I would define in the contract how out-of-scope requests are handled, and from a legal and contractual standpoint, what does it take to get a modification to the contract or an add, a change order, whatever you want to call it, an add-on. And just what is your communication process going to look like with your client when your client calls and asks for extra work? If you have employees working for you, it becomes even more critical for you to adequately explain and go over the scope of services with your employees and make sure they fully understand what's included and not included in the scope. And unfortunately, many of our clients don't have a big enough budget to afford all the things that they want. And really learning those good communication skills that it takes to communicate with clients and make sure that you are able to recover all those extra services is a really important part of your company's leadership and managing projects effectively. So put a process in place that outlines all the steps of how you're going to handle an out-of-scope request by your clients, and train your people how to have those conversations and how to handle them internally in terms of how you track them from your timesheets and all of that. And that will really help you make more money on your projects and not lose as much as the contract can tend to get out of control. So the fifth area where I see companies lose money is in utilization. And the last thing you want is your employees figuratively sitting on the bench. You don't want them to have downtime where they don't have work to do. And so managing your resources within your firm is critical to ensuring that you have the appropriate rate of utilization. Now, the average firm, according to Zweig White and PSMJ and some of the other surveys that are done across the A&E industry, show that the typical company has A&E firm has about a 60% utilization rate, and that would be including your non-billable or administrative employees and your principals and everybody who may or may not be billable. So company-wide, you're looking at, around 60%. And your individual employees really should have their own target utilization rate. So people that you affect, you would hope to be fully billable, you're hoping to get them at least hopefully 75% billable, and that would take into account their time off and business development time and other things like that that you might expect from them. So how do you keep people, billable at that rate? What it really comes down to is really understanding your numbers. It comes to understanding what people you're going to need to be working on projects and how many hours each week they need to be working, and being able to forecast that into the future so that you can determine whether you've got enough work for everybody in the future, or in some cases you may have too much work and you may need to go out and find someone. And it's almost just as bad to have a big backlog of work and not have anybody to do the work, because then you're losing out on revenue also. So these are things you really need to think about. How can you project that? How can you figure out what that's going to take? And I recommend that you have a system for that. It could be a resource planning system. It could be a spreadsheet. But you need to have some way, depending on how many people you have and what it's going to take to be able to project that number, you really need to have a good process in place for figuring that out. And don't forget to take into account what projects may be coming in the door. If you got a bunch of proposals sitting out there that might be coming in, you need to take those into account and when those could start ticking off as well. So getting that whole picture of here's our current backlog, here's the future backlog, and here's the projects that might be coming in, having that whole picture and being able to really look at it effectively is a bit of a balancing act, and it takes a bit of skill. I like to say it's an art and a science, and it can really make a big difference on your profitability of your company if you have employees. So the sixth area where I see a lot of companies lose money is in just the overall management of the projects. And project management these days is a very difficult role. If you think about what most project managers end up doing in their firm, and if any of you, and I assume most of you at some time have managed projects, you would think that it would just be, you know, managing the deliverables and the schedule and the people and the client and all of that. But in many cases, it involves probably your 10 or 20 other tasks or responsibilities or functions within your company that you have to think about. Many project managers have to do business development. They might have to hire people, and so they end up getting involved in some HR-type knowledge that they might need to have. You know, many managers have to review people's timesheets and approve them. You might have to do performance reviews. You might have to deal with putting out fires and solving problems and having difficult conversations with both employees and clients. So project managers these days have a very wide job description and very often aren't really trained to do all the things that they are responsible to do. So what you want to do here is make your project management role, whether that's yourself or others within your organization, you want to make it as easy for them as possible. You want to find ways that you can streamline what it takes them to do their job every day, to give them the most administrative support that you can. And it really is much cheaper to use administrative support to support your project managers than it is to have them doing all the administrative tasks like billing and collections and all of those other things. Even things like scheduling people and interfacing with subcontractors. The more that you can make their work easy, it's going to help save money. And also a good system can help with this by providing the information that they need on a real-time basis as possible to see what's going on in the projects. How much money are we spending against each phase and task? And how much money is left? And are we on track? One of the things you really need to keep your eye on is earned value or estimate to complete on your projects. If you are able to see on a regular basis how much money you've spent on each phase, and also to assess how much work is still left to be done, then you can really figure out whether you're on track or, you know, above or behind where you should be on your project. And the better job you can do of having processes and systems in place manage projects and help project managers be effective, the more money you're going to make on your projects. So number seven, managing cash flow in an architecture firm is extremely important. I've worked with many firms over the years that were very profitable on paper. In other words, on an accrual accounting basis, they were profitable. They were, quote, making more than they were spending, but because the clients weren't paying them, they actually went out of business. And so cash flow management is an extremely important part of running a firm. And if your clients aren't paying you, I like to say that you're financing their projects. And your clients usually know how far they can push you in not paying and will push you as far as they can. And so looking and really managing your invoice cycle is critical to getting the cash flow in, get under control. What this involves, first of all, and first and foremost, is timesheet management. If you have employees, staying on top of their timesheets, getting them to do their timesheets every day so they're extremely accurate, getting them approved, again, so they're accurate and people are charging to the right things. And also by approving them, you're also going to hopefully catch some of those extra services that might be slipping through the cracks. So the timesheets are really, really critical to your invoice cycle. Because if they're wrong, then you spend a lot of time at the end of the month trying to figure out, you know, what time should have been charged to different phases and tasks. And figuring out whether you can bill things as extras. And if you end up sending an inaccurate invoice to a client, they're going to potentially contest the invoice, send it back, and that's going to add more time to your invoice cycle where you're not getting paid. So everything starts with the timesheets and making sure they're entered daily and approved and reviewed on a regular basis is really important. And enforcing your company policies with your timesheets. And the next stage is looking at your billing process. Are people turning the bills around fast enough? Are you getting them out the door? Depending on the number of projects you have in your company, you know, that you can get them out in a day or two, up to a week. And if they're taking longer than a week, you have a real problem internally. And it's probably because it's a manual process to get your bills done. And then the other part of your invoice cycle is your collection process and making sure that you're staying on top of those outstanding receivables and you're really on top of them as much as you can and getting paid as fast as you can. And my experience in working with the architectural firm that I worked with for 15 years was the subcontractors that would call and bug the architect to get the money would get paid faster. And I believe that, you know, it's true for the architects as well. The more you stay on top of your receivables and go through that collection process, the faster you're going to get paid. So the squeaky wheel really does get the oil when it comes to getting paid. And I'd like to just throw one other real quick thought out there, and that is if you have a client that continuously doesn't pay you, then they're really not a very good client. And in the long run, they're going to hold you back from growing your business. So you really need to think about that because it really is so critical to a company's survival and growth to be able to have good cash flow and make sure that you don't have to continuously borrow money in order to keep your business alive. So number eight is having non-integrated data and systems. And what this really goes back to is really looking at your business and what does it take to run the business from a systematic standpoint. Do you have multiple databases where you might have client information, where you have project information? Are you using spreadsheets a lot? And usually that's where I usually start with our clients in trying to help them figure out whether their systems are working for them or not, is to look at spreadsheets. And if you have a bunch of spreadsheets, you know, you may be able to manage it now in spreadsheets, but eventually it's going to become a burden for you. Spreadsheets do not allow you to grow your business because nobody else really knows how to use your spreadsheets. And very often they're inaccurate. I very often will go into a spreadsheet and I'll find mistakes that are being made in the spreadsheets. If you're looking at growing your business, you need to start thinking about having an efficient system where data is only entered in one place, one time, and you're easily able to get the information that you need. And this goes back to what we were talking about earlier with your qualifications data, because your accounting system is going to have a lot of that important data. If you do have a client relationship management system to manage your client information and your opportunities, you need to make sure that's clean and easy to use and it's not a lot of redundant data and spreadsheets all over your business. This is just going to waste your time and keep you from being able to grow. And then the ninth and final area of where companies lose money is because they lose a client. And it's kind of the thing that we all dread the most in our business is losing a client. And really what this should say here is losing a good client. Because I'm going to tell you right now, there's some clients that you probably need to lose. The clients you need to lose are the ones that don't treat you well, they don't value your work, they're always trying to get you to lower your fees, and worst of all, they don't pay you in the end. And all of us have had clients like that through the years, and I find that they suck the life out of you in many cases. They take all of your time, they take all of your employees' time, and you waste the most time with the clients that are the least productive and you're really making the least amount of money on. So I really recommend you look at who your good clients are and do everything you can to retain them. And part of that might start with looking at having a CRM or client relationship management system. I started my business in 1990 as a one-man firm, just me for 6 years, and I had a CRM. Back then it was ACT. There's some out there that are more project-focused than ACT as well that are out there on the market, but a good CRM system can really help you manage client information, stay on top of your opportunities, and make sure that you stay in touch with your clients. And one of the things I recommend is that you look at your clients and divide them up into A, B, and C clients. And that requires really sitting down and thinking about the criteria for you and what does it mean for you to have a good client versus a bad client. What would constitute a good A client, a B client, and a C client? And I recommend you put all your efforts into your A clients. And if you remember the old Pareto formula, I believe that 80% of your profits come from 20% of your clients. So really focusing in on who those good clients are and who you're making the money off of, and then making sure you don't lose those clients. And very often, clients can be perfectly happy with your work, and you get along with them great, and they can still fire you. And the reason might be because they have a better relationship with somebody else. So you really just want to make sure that doesn't happen and that you really, really know what's on their mind and how to keep them happy. And I recommend trying to meet with your good clients as often as possible face-to-face. It really makes a huge difference in understanding what's on their mind and also, you know, just really knowing whether there's other things that you can help them with as they're growing their businesses. So again, we're going to go back and take a little bit deeper look at the three key metrics. And before we do that, Anik, I think we have a poll. Did you have the?
Yep, I'm here. I'd just like to mute my line, so a little delay. So what we did is I figured we would just ask the question, since it is true or false, just ask it into the chat box. And if you want to go ahead and ask the participants that question, I'll monitor the chat and we can see the responses here.
Oh, okay. So everybody, my question is true or false. Have you been able to recognize areas out of those nine areas that we just talked about where you may be losing money or where you might be able to find some more money in your projects? And I'm just really interested to hear everybody's response and see if this is making you think about some areas where you might be able to make more money.
All right. Daniel says true. Ed says yes. Carrie says yes. Chris says yes. James says yes. Rick says yes. Jonathan says yes. Yes. It's going too quickly here. Peter says yes. We're getting a lot of trues. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Could stand improvement in all areas, says Paul. Michelle says, of course. Yes, I have. Michael. Bruce says yes. All the way from New Zealand, I believe. True, says Roxanne. Rick says, I do not have a database of fees, hours, project, profit. And Don says, certainly.
Okay, so it sounds overwhelming.
I think so.
So good. I'm hoping I really gave you some good ideas. And what I want to do now is kind of give you a foundation for making improvements in your business. And the first thing you need to do in order to do that is to understand how big the problem is and start learning to measure it. And once you've learned to measure it, I think that'll give you the conviction to realize that it's worth investing in improving your people, your processes, and your technology in order to make more money and to help your company to be able to grow profitably. So we're going to look at these three metrics, and I'm going to give you some examples. And I realize that some of these numbers may have, you know, be far off from numbers that you might have within your businesses, but as you grow your business, I think you'll see that some of these numbers, you know, you may be getting to this point or you're hoping to be at this point sometime and understand what these numbers might look like. So what I want you to think about for yourself as we're going through this is, what if I could improve these three metrics by 1%? And 1%, the reason I use 1% is because it seems doable. I never like to recommend to anybody that they try to do something that's unrealistic. And I believe 1% is very doable. And if you can improve your business by just 1% every year, your company's going to be a lot more profitable and able to grow. So first of all, let's talk about the win rate. And we're going to look at how we can calculate the return on investment from just a 1% increase in your win rate. So let's pretend we have a company called Design Partners, and they have 100 proposals they do a year at an average of $300,000 per proposal, and they won 29 of those proposals. So they have a 29% win rate. 1% increase, which means for them, in this particular simplified example, it's just winning one more proposal a year is $300,000. And so obviously taking a good look at those factors that we talked about earlier, managing opportunities, having a good go, no-go process, and working on improving your cumbersome proposal process could really pay off for a company where their average proposal is around $300,000. That's a lot of money. So the next area is utilization rate. And looking at an increase in your utilization rate, if we had a company that had 100 people at an average rate of $125 an hour, and their average utilization rate was around 60%, which would give them about 1,248 billable hours per person per year, 1% for them would be $260,000. That's just 1% going from 60% to 61%. And you guys can calculate your own metrics, and we're going to be talking about how to do that in a few minutes. The next area is the project profit margin. And for many firms, if they just focus on this one number, this can make a big enough difference for them to realize how important it is to really work on all these nine areas. So if we look at a company called Greenworks, and they do 400 projects a year at an average $25,000, and this will be kind of more like a company that does more space planning or interior design rather than kind of large base building design. But so their average project for a $25,000 project is around $2,500 or 10%. I think the average in the industry is around pretty close to 10%, depending on whether you do government or commercial and who your clients are. A 1% increase for this firm would be $100,000, and this is $100,000 to the bottom line, not to their top line revenue as the win rate and the utilization rate offer you, but this is 1% increase in the bottom line, how much profit is left in your pocket at the end of the year. And I also want you to think about, this isn't just a 1% increase this year at $100,000. This is every year. So the improvements you make in your business are going to help you grow and are going to help you be more profitable every year that you do business in the future. So we want to figure out how to find those loss of dollars for your company. And it requires that you start thinking about what your 1% is as we go through this process. And so here are your six steps to increasing profits. Number one, calculate your metrics. And I'm going to show you how to do that in a minute. Then you're going to calculate the 1% increase for each of your three metrics, You're going to do an assessment of your business to understand which of the nine areas, what's really going on in those nine areas, and where in the people, process, and technology can you improve. And then I'm going to have you develop a plan. And that means looking at all the areas that you learned about during your assessment and prioritize. And I think if you can go and get one change or improvement done per quarter every year, at the end of the year you'll find that you've improved four significant things in your business. And that's a lot. That's really, really going to help you a lot. And then I want you to go implement that plan, and that's the hard part. That's where you have to really get people focused in the right direction and make changes. And then on an ongoing basis, you need to keep your eye on the prize. You need to keep measuring, keep monitoring your metrics, and make sure you're continuing to go in the right direction. So first of all, looking at your metrics, you're going to calculate your win rate, utilization, and project profit margin. And I've got the formulas up on the screen. Your win rate can be done two ways. You can do it by units and dollars. And you're going to probably see a huge difference between those two calculations. Your unit win rate will be the number of proposals won divided by the number submitted, and that's a very common way of doing it. But I also recommend you take the dollar value of proposals won and the dollar value of proposals submitted and figure out what your dollar win rate is. And that could be a really different number. I was with a firm the other day, and their unit win rate was 55%, but their dollar win rate was 19%. So they were winning all their small ones, and they were losing the big ones. And that hurts. That hurts a lot, and they're wasting a lot of money. And so they really need to look at what's going on there. Your utilization is your billable hours for all your staff that are available, that were worked during a period, so this is a looking back, divided by the total available work hours for your staff. Most people have about 2,080 hours in a year. Some companies calculate this by subtracting the PTO or time off from the available work hours. So instead of using 2,080, you might use 2,000 or 1960 or something like that. But whatever number you decide to use, I just recommend you remain consistent and keep using the same formula. So everybody's not going to do this exactly the same way, but as long as everybody understands how it's calculated and you continue to keep using the same formula, you should be able to see some results after a while. And then your project profit margin is your net project profit divided by your total project revenue. And some people choose to calculate this based on total project net revenue, which is after you've subtracted your subcontractors. You can do this either way, whatever way makes more sense for you. And then you're going to calculate your 1%. So the 1% for your win rate is the dollar value of your proposal submitted times 1%. That's a 1% increase. Your utilization is the total available work hours for your staff times the rate times 1%, and your total project revenue times 1% will give you your 1% increase in your project profit margin. These are pretty simple formulas, not too complicated. Again, I really believe in keeping it simple, and I think, you know, if you explain these to your project managers and people you work with, they're going to be able to understand these simplified metrics. And then you need to do the assessment of your company. And this requires taking a really detailed look at each of these nine areas. And I recommend that you interview your staff and go through and figure out what are we doing with people, processes, and technology in each of these nine areas. And what's really happening on a daily basis? For example, in estimating, you know, what templates are we using? Go look at your spreadsheets or whatever templates you're using. Are the rates really adequate? Are you adequately accounting in your scope of services or estimate for contingencies and meetings and things that tend to take your projects over budget? In your scope management, do you have a process in place for managing extra services, and do your people know how to follow that process? And does your system help you capture that information? So each of these areas, take a really good deep look at what you're doing and start to document the process and put it down on paper. Try to sit down, talk to people in your company and ask them, what are the bottlenecks you experience every day in doing your job? And then you can develop a plan, and I basically just put a bunch of categories down the left and breaking out your plan into process, training, and systems and what your priority level is for each of those and whose responsibility and target date. So this is just my format that I use in a spreadsheet, but you can use any format that works for you in helping you come up with a plan for what are the most important things. And keep in mind your 1%, because that's going to help guide you towards where you're going to get the biggest impact. And then you're going to implement the changes, and that's going to require some leadership. I recommend you treat your changes as a project. So if you are looking at improving your system or putting a new CRM in, for example, or improving your processes, you need to go through and treat this like a project. You need to put a team together and communicate with everybody about why you're doing it and how important it is. Get feedback from people in your company and get their help and buy-in. And really take a good look at your processes, what's going on, and test new processes and see if they're going to work for you. And I also highly recommend a lot of training. Training is very critical to making sure that people really know what they're doing. And ultimately, where I see most companies fall down, and this is really important if you're a small company and you want to grow, is learning how to hold people accountable. It's just so critical to making sure that all these things that you're putting in place are going to work for you. And then so over time, you can start off with, you know, putting all this data down in a spreadsheet with calculating your win rate, utilization, and project profit margin, and then you need to monitor it. Monitor it 6, 12, 18 months out into the future to see whether it's improving. Are things getting better? The more that you look at numbers and keep them in everybody's focus, and I recommend looking at them on a monthly basis if you can, but the more you keep them in people's focus, the more attention they're going to pay, and the more results, the better results you're going to see. So I know this was a lot of information today, and I just want to let you know it's hard. People procrastinate, and it's hard to get things done. But keep in mind that no matter how slow you go, you're still lapping everybody on the couch. So as long as you're moving in the right direction and getting something done and making some improvement to your business, you may be doing a lot more than what your competitors are doing. And it's going to really, really help you to grow your business. So that's all I had for today, and I'm very appreciative to Anik and for inviting me to this event. I really, really hope that I've given you some things to think about, and we do have some time, I believe, for some questions.
We certainly do. So we do have a few questions here, and just want to point out that this does not quite conclude the session, but we're going to obviously have our questions here. And let's see here. So let's come back. And we do have a couple questions. A lot of our audience are sole proprietors, June, and as such, sometimes they lack the terminology about what some of these things are. I did see a question asking about an explanation of what a CRM is. So could you just describe what a CRM is and why it might be useful to a solo architect?
Sure. A CRM basically allows you to store a lot of information about your clients and the projects that you're pursuing so that you just have a database of information. Really, usually focus, most CRMs focus on two things. One is contact management, so keeping track of your clients and then all the contacts at your client's office and all their contact information. And the second part is managing opportunities. What projects are you going after? And ultimately being able to forecast what work might be coming in based on the projects that you're going after, and then also keeping track of which projects you won and which projects you lost, because that can help you down the road to figure out what's working and not working, and really looking at ultimately that helps you calculate your win rate.
Okay, great. And we would just love to unmute your line and have you actually talk to June and myself. If you'd like to do so, you can raise your hand over in the GoToWebinar control panel. There's that orange button with the white arrow. You can open and close your control panel. You should have a button there to raise your hand. We can unmute your line if you have a microphone on your computer, if you're dialed in through a laptop or a tablet. Otherwise, you can use the call-in instructions that were in the original email. Now, even that applies even if you already asked a question through chat. We'd love to hear your voice. I'm just going to ask a couple. So, David, did that kind of cover your question on the CRM? I'll look for that in the questions here. So, let's see. David also asks, I'm a sole proprietor with very low overhead because I work from home and have no employees. Do you have any ideas for getting a good number from my project profit margin when there's little cost to the project? How to get a good number from project profit margin when there's little cost to the project?
Well, obviously, if you don't have a salary you're paying yourself and any overhead, you probably have a little bit of overhead, but you really need to kind of figure out what your true cost is. And your true cost is probably what you could be making if you were working somewhere else, because you're giving up that salary or that cost to be able to work on these projects and have your own business. You really need to try to figure out what a reasonable cost would be for yourself to figure out, you know, really are you estimating or bidding enough for your time? Because ultimately at the end of the year, you're going to want to make sure that you made enough money to keep going and continue to have your own business and hopefully grow over time. So that's what I would start with. And it's always good to keep your overhead low when you're a sole proprietor. And ultimately, what gets you to that next step is making that decision to hire that next person. And that's always a huge decision for most people. It took me quite a while to get to that point. But what I did find when I did add that next person and that next person was I could really leverage myself and stay focused on what I was best at and not have to do everything. And it makes a huge difference in being able to grow your business.
Yep, I agree. So we have, thank you, June. We have a question here from Seth. Seth, I'm going to unmute your line, and we'll see if your sound works okay.
Hi, guys. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can. Okay. But there is a little bit of, I'm going to mute you for a second. There's a little bit of feedback. So if you could just turn down your speakers a little bit or your sound, it'll help mitigate that problem. But while you talk, it won't be an issue. So I'm going to unmute your line and just ask your question.
Okay. June, thanks for the presentation. It was really great. I do have a question about the integrated data. You talked about how spreadsheets prevent or can sometimes propagate inaccuracies. And you said they were kind of a personal thing that prevents you from growing a business. I started using like a QuickBooks type software when I first started my business and abandoned it after maybe 6 months because I found that I was spending significant amounts of time entering data that I could keep track of in a very personal way on a sort of Excel spreadsheet. What are your sort of recommendations for a sole practitioner office for that kind of scalable data or getting more centralized or, as you put it, integrated data?
Well, I am a CPA, so I'm thinking through the whole process in terms of what's going to happen through the end of the year and being able to give that information over to your accountants so they can help you with your taxes and that kind of thing. And I'm also thinking about if you want to grow your business, really, truly, an architect is great at doing architecture, not always so great at accounting. And really, most architects don't want to spend a lot of time doing accounting. I personally would recommend outsourcing some bookkeeping, you know, for just a very, very small amount of your time should really be spent doing some of that administrative stuff and being able to leverage your time as effectively as possible to do your work and to go after new work. But, you know, and I think that's why you struggled with the QuickBooks. It just doesn't come natural, you know, to sit and enter the information. But it really does, over time, provide much better historical data for you to be able to go back and look at what you're making and what it costs to do projects and things like that. So having the data in a place where it's accessible by others and can be used for different purposes is ultimately going to be more efficient. But it and part of it's going to depend on your volume as well.
Does that answer your question, Seth?
It does. I guess I'm also interested in sort of at what point does that hump get over that hump to making it very valuable to have that centralized data? And I guess that must be a personal issue based on whatever point you are in your business development.
Yeah, you know, as a sole person, you don't really have to rely on other people as much, and you probably have a few subcontractors or other people that you're, you know, dealing with on an as-needed basis. But, you know, at the end of the year, it's really nice to be able to turn all that stuff over to an accountant and let them do your taxes and your 1099s and all of that stuff and not have to worry about it yourself and make sure it's correct. And then if the IRS ever does come back, that you have good records. So, you know, it's hard to say what that hump is, but just my experience is most people don't like doing it anyway. I did it myself for years, and I was an accountant, so it probably wasn't as hard for me. But now I just started a new business in April. I sold my old business and started a new one, and I went out and found a bookkeeper because it's just not something I want to spend my time doing. I think it starts to become something that you just want to spend your time doing what you love and what you're great at. So it's just a decision you have to make there.
Great. Thanks for the input and question, Seth. All right. So let's see. We have another hand up here from Chris. I'm going to unmute your line. Okay, you're live, Chris.
Hello, good morning.
Yep.
Can you hear me fine?
We can hear you.
Excellent. June, I really want to thank you for the presentation. It's a lot of information here. It's all been really, really good. Wanted to go back and talk to you just real quickly about your invoice cycle point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, thinking through that, we've got a situation where over the years, you know, I've tried to talk with other architects about how their firms build, and everybody seems to get nervous when we start having that conversation. Nobody really wants to really have an open conversation about it. It's kind of touchy. For our firm, being residential, we bill by the square foot of the project, and then we go back and measure that on projects with metrics based on the amount of hours that we spend on a project to make sure that we're not losing profitability. And we found that the projects have done this scope creep that you're talking about, where the time per project has continued to increase. But we've also found that the cash flow over time has continued to spread out as we bill when a part of the process, preliminary design development, whatever you want to call it, finishes, we send an invoice out. But we've found that those times in between those processes have creeped up and continued to expand. Are there other, at what point would you consider changing your billing process or switching to something else? Or is it a matter of, this is a very broad question here, and I don't mean to put you in an awkward position to answer something that you don't have enough information on, but can you talk a little bit about the billing process and when you should consider switching to another one versus, you know, going back and just improving some of these metrics to make the process work better?
Yeah, well, it sounds like there's a couple things going on there. For one, it sounds like you're billing at a milestone basis for when
Correct.
Each phase is complete. Most firms are billing monthly. So a couple things is, and I don't know whether you're getting, are you getting deposits up front from your client?
Yes. Because
you definitely want to get a reasonably significant deposit up front. That obviously is going to help your cash flow. You want to be billing at least monthly, and that way you're, you know, if it takes you 3 months to get schematic design done, you're at least getting, continuing to get some cash in the door, and applying that initial deposit to your last invoice. So that's what I see as pretty typical. Some firms, rather than, I guess, square footage, you're billing it kind of like a fixed fee. It sounds like a basic fee. Some people are billing on percent complete as on a monthly basis. So, you know, each month you look at what you spent and where the project, you know, from the project manager believes what percent complete they are in terms of being done with the work on that phase and billing it as a percent complete, which I've always called a phase fixed fee. But it that's the most common way I've seen of doing that. That type of job.
Okay. In that process, I mean, is there are you going back to some specific metric to estimate what percentage of completion of a particular phase is?
You have to look at two things. One is going to be just that project manager's gut feeling on where they are, and I obviously that takes some experience, but you measure that against the dollars that you've spent. So you're going to look each month at the time you've put on your timesheets on those phases and what percentage of the dollars you've spent. So if you have a $10,000 phase and you spend $8,000, then you're 80% complete on that phase. But the project manager might say, well, you know what, we're not 80% done with the work. We're only, you know, 60% done with the work. And a part of that is just an it's your experience in knowing how to determine that. But that's the norm. That's what I see probably 90% of the time is what most firms are doing.
Great.
And
thanks.
Then if you run into a situation where you're finding a huge discrepancy between those two, I guess it would be time to go back and reevaluate.
You need to be looking at it every week if possible. People should be filling their timesheets out every day. And every week you should be looking at those numbers so that you don't have to wait till the end of the month when everything gets out of control.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Yep. All right. So we have just a couple minutes left here for a couple questions. There were a couple questions here, June, about the non-integrated data and how to integrate it. And also Colin asked, what is the system you use to integrate data in number 8? So could you speak to that?
Well, it really depends. There's several, you know, products out on the market specifically designed for architectural firms. If you are kind of a one-person firm, you know, QuickBooks can really help you. There's pieces that you can add on to QuickBooks. I know BillQuick is a product that seems to be getting some momentum now on that very small firm level. And when you start to get, you know, more employees, you're getting over kind of 10, 15 employees, then you're going to be looking at maybe systems that are a little bit more sophisticated, like a Jira or Dell TechVision. And it really depends on what you're trying to automate. If you want to automate your full project life cycle, including your, you know, having that CRM system and proposal system all tied in, then you're going to be looking at a more sophisticated system. And you know, when you look at what it costs to implement those systems, I urge you to really think about the future and where you're going. If you're a 10-man firm and you're going to stay a 10-man firm, it's probably not worth it to go and spend a lot of money and get a really high-end system, because it is going to cost a bit of money to get it implemented and trained and get it running efficiently. But if your goal is to grow your company and be 50 employees in 3 years, it is well worth getting a really good system now and spending the money when you're small and going through the pain of changing now than waiting till you're 50 and, you know, you've got a lot more stuff on your plate to manage. So it really just depends on what your goal, your individual goals are, where you are now, where you're going to be in 5 years. And I recommend getting, you know, a consultant. There's different consultants that work with these different systems. I recommend you find one that you like that can help you to make sure it's done right.
Yep. Thank you very much. for the questions. And let's see. Thank you, June, for that. So I just probably want to wrap it up here. Do have a couple comments that I wanted to read here. Chris says, one of the more practical and useful presentations, a lot of information. Will we be able to review this session or slideshow? Yes, everything will be posted to your member area on Business of Architecture. So there's that. Michelle says, love the presentation. I have already bookmarked your site and downloaded the book. So again, people really appreciate, sounds like a lot of positive feedback. And then Don, I guess one last question Don here was asking, and I know this is something you've worked with before, June, is Don's asking, do you have experience with Deltek or Axiom, which was recently acquired by Deltek? Maybe you can just finish up by answering that question.
Yes, for 25 years, my business was, we were a Deltek Vision partner. Actually, previously Wintu Software partner and became a Deltek Vision partner about 9 years ago. I actually just sold that business about a month ago, but I have a lot of experience with it. So that is a very strong area of my expertise.
All right, and Don, you can reach June. If you want to go back one slide, there's her contact information there. And so anyone who wants to, you know, I'm sure June would be glad to answer any questions at any of those links, Twitter, et cetera. So
yeah.
I just wanted to, first of all, thank those of you that have been tweeting on Twitter. We've gotten, I really want to, let's light up Twitter with conversation about Business of Architecture Summit. If you're on Twitter, Patricio, thank you for tweeting. Joshua Lloyd, thank you for the shout out. I appreciate that. And Jacob, who's not with us today, but he tweeted also, Sharice Schechter. So, and Jess Stafford joining us from Big Time Small Firms. So thank you guys. And maybe Nick Renard's on there also. Don't know, but thank you everyone for joining us. So sessions will be posted no later than next weekend. That's the plan. We have about 16 hours of video we're going to be processing. In addition to that, we have to set up the quizzes so that if you want CES credit, we can actually record and prove that you did actually watch the recordings. So, you know, it seems like a simple process. I know sometimes just to post a recording, but it's a little bit more involved. So it's going to take us about a week to do that. So June, I want to thank you for your time. Thank you for joining us today on the Business of Architecture Summit. I want to remind everyone that I'm going to go ahead and close down this session. So keep your email link that you use to log into this session, and we'll be back online in about another 15 minutes if all goes well, which I hope it will. And with Jonathan Siegel, FAIA. So, June, why don't you give us your parting words and tell us about the book you have on the screen.
Right. And so my book is Find the Lost Dollars, and it goes into a lot more detail of what we just talked about today. I do have a special offer just for the Business of Architecture Summit attendees, and that is if you go to this landing page, aecbusiness.com/BOA ebook, you can download a completely free copy of the book, the entire book. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to your people.